Good morning, everyone. Missouri County Board of County Commissioners meeting will now come to order. Anyone has any cell phones or any other audible devices, if you'd silence them now, please, as not to disrupt the rest of the meeting. And if you'll stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Moving along to number 2.5. If there's any Tom Brady fans out there, too bad. Now we'll move on to number 3, discussion of possible action, the approval of the agenda for February the 6th, 2018. Do we have any changes to be made today,
Mr. We do have a few, Mr. Chairman, that we'd like to move around. We'd like to move numbers 8, 9, and 10 up just a smidge right after consent agenda and before staff and board reports, please. And then we'd also like to move number 25 up to immediately following number 17.
After
17.
After 17?
County Commissioner, I don't know.
After.
Okay. All right.
Okay, and the, I want to confirm this, 8, 9, and 10 after 5 or before 5?
Right after 5. So.
Okay, gotcha.
UTE. Right. All right, do we have any questions regarding today's agenda item? Public comment? Hearing none, if I can get a motion to approve with the changes made.
Okay, I'll make a motion to approve the agenda for February 6, 2018, with the changes noted as moving items 8, 9, and 10 to follow item 5, and to move item 25 after item 17.
I'll second the motion.
Move and second to approve today's agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Very good. Moving on now to item number 4, this is discussion and possible action, approval of the minutes for December the 5th, 2017. Is there any public comment regarding the minutes of December the 5th? Commissioners have any comments? Can I get a motion to approve?
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes for December 5th, 2017.
Second.
It's been moved and second to approve the minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number 5. This is the consent agenda. Is there any public comment regarding today's consent agenda?
Okay. Good.
Hearing none, if I can get a motion to approve today's consent agenda.
I'll make a motion to approve today's consent agenda.
Second.
Been moved and second to approve today's consent agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously.
Mr. Chairman, before you call number 8 next, I would respectfully request, I've got individuals en route, hopefully, to speak if necessary to numbers 8 and 9, so perhaps we can hear number 10 first.
All right. Very good. Moving on now, we're going to hear item number 10. Discussion and possible action. This is acceptance of Public Works Director resignation. Ms. Langer.
Mr. Chairman, the Public Works Director has agreed to tender his resignation in lieu of termination, and in exchange for that, he would sign a full release of any and all legal and administrative claims which could be brought against Story County, and he would have a payment of $5,000.
Okay. The any commissioners have any questions for legal counsel on this?
No questions.
Okay. I'll open up if there's any public comment regarding this matter. All right. Then I'll go back and ask staff's recommendation.
Mr. Chairman, staff's recommendation is to accept the Public Works Director's resignation in lieu of termination as presented under the terms as announced by the district attorney and also contained in the staff summary provided.
Very good. All right. With that said, I'll go ahead and ask for a motion for approval.
Yeah, I'll move to accept the Public Works Director's resignation in lieu of termination as described in paragraph 4 below.
I'll second your motion.
Moved and second to approve this item. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously.
Yeah, why now, do we... Mr. Chairman, if we could hear number 9, we're prepared.
Okay, number 9. Very good. Next up, we'll hear item 9. This is discussion of possible action. Consideration of possible approval of guidelines for considering and approving special assessment district projects pursuant to NRS 271.700 through 271.730, including a special assessment district for the construction of an affluent pipeline to the Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, we're here for just a minute.
Thank you.
If I may, I'm going to kick this off. I also want to recognize a gentleman that's invaluable to the county, and that's Mr. Martin Johnson. He's our financial advisor. He's in the back of the room if there are questions. We've briefed you from time to time, and you've taken action on what was the economic development financing proposal, the EDFP, for the effluent pipeline project. As numbers have been calculated, recalculated, and calculated yet again, we could not find a way to meet all the parameters and criteria as outlined in Senate Bill 1 of the special session known as the Faraday session. So in looking at this next, there is a probability or possibility, I guess I should really say, that a special assessment or a special improvement district could come into the picture. These are fairly common projects, not the project as the pipeline, but the projects, I'm told that they're typically involved in redevelopment, in residential. I'm not really prepared today to go into the particulars, although we can if you wish, but I would suggest that having special assessment guidelines, regardless of whether it's for the effluent pipeline, you know, or other projects. I'm sure you've all read that the Painted Rock project has recently sold. We're sure that we're anticipating heavy interest there. This could be a good solution out there. It's basically where the property tax owners will carry a special assessment on their parcels. So with that, our legal counsel, Kendra Fillet from Sherman and Howard, has drafted up guidelines that we can use really for any special assessment district under consideration. And these establish right up front, okay, if you're going to apply, these are the ground rules. There needs to be an independent assessor to look at property values. There needs to be an engineer that is looking at the proposed uses. There are all kinds of steps. And probably most important for us, for the applicants, we say right up front, we have some expenses with gentlemen like Mr. Johnson and also Kendra. They pay for those as well through a deposit. So these are guidelines. These are guidelines that have been used throughout the state of Nevada. Chief Deputy District Attorney Keith Loomis has reviewed these and has sat in on briefing sessions for staff and for you folks. So staff does recommend we adopt these guidelines.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Mr. Gilman.
With an abundance of caution, I'm going to recuse myself from discussions or voting on this issue, as I have a pecuniary interest in the Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center.
Good. Thank you, Lance.
But is that necessary? Because we're not voting on anything that specifically puts the industrial park. We're just basically approving some kind of guidelines countywide. Am I right?
We are the main beneficiary potentially of the guidelines at this point is going to be the landowners out in the Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center, and I think that in an excess of caution, the recusal is a good move.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
Okay, well, basically, I find that we're still in our infancy with putting something together with this. So.
Yeah, well, that would be a very accurate statement.
I don't really have any questions for you as well. We can open up for public comment. Anyone have any public comment regarding going ahead and approving guidelines for special assessment districts?
Nicole.
Oh, Ms. Bard.
Nicole Bard, Story County resident. So under these guidelines, as I've skimmed, read them, the county is not liable for any default that might occur should the private developer, so should something happen with that bond that is essentially backed by the county and the state, right?
You know, we anticipated good questions like this, and I think rather than me answer that from a layman's viewpoint, with your indulgence, Mr. Chairman, I would like to bring Mr. Johnson up, and maybe he can just give us a primer on special assessment districts, a brief overview.
There you go.
Austin. We've got Marty, you want to go to just the guidelines?
Sure.
Not the one-on-one.
But just the address the liability issue that was after. So,
please introduce yourself.
Yes, Marty Johnson for the record with J&A Consulting Group. And I guess one important point to understand on these guidelines is that these don't require the county to take any particular action in the future. These are just guidelines that if something were to come up, we would look at them. In terms of the liability, the way the guidelines are laid out, there are bonds that would be issued by the county for a project. The security for the repayment of those bonds is the assessments levied on those parcels and the a reserve fund that would be funded out of the bond proceeds to cover 1 year's interest. So we do state in the guidelines that the county does not intend to pledge its general fund or taxing authority for these types of transactions. They are intended to stand on the value of the property as it exists. Is that sufficient, Pat, or do you want me to run through these other bullet points?
You had mentioned to me kind of a scenario, and I thought it helped explain how that worked, if you could do that again, you know, as far as the property values assessments.
Sure. As part of this process, and maybe in doing that, I'll just kind of go through these bullet points that that we have here for these guidelines. First of all, only governmental projects can be done. These guidelines do not apply to or not intended to apply to someone coming in and saying we want to finance a private project. Whatever project is has to be governmentally owned when this is all said and done. The amount that can be assessed against a particular piece of property, again, is separate and apart from property taxes. It has no impact at all on what the property taxes will be received from that parcel. And that assessment cannot exceed the market value of that parcel or the benefit it will receive from the project. As part of this process, you'll notice that we hire an appraiser, and the county selects that appraiser to determine what the value of the property is today and after the project is complete. These guidelines call for the value of the property to be 3.5 times the value of that assessment. And so that's where, we're able to use the property as the security for the financing because, again, that property is worth at least 3.5 times the amount of the assessment. If that value is not met, there are other mechanisms that can be used to cash deposit, letter of credit, additional security that can be put up to bring that value to that 3.5-to-1 lien ratio. I think Pat already talked about the deposit. The County Commission does have the ability to waive various provisions in this if we determine that there is a project that is so beneficial to the county that, for example, exceeding a 20-year repayment term is in our best interest. But, again, that is up to the County Commission to decide at that particular point in time. So with that, I'll answer any other questions.
Thanks, Mr. Johnson. Nicole, does that answer your question?
Yes and no. That actually generates another question. When it says that at the end of the day that the project needs to be government-owned, What does that mean? Let's use a real-time example. Should the pipeline fall under this guideline and the pipeline, we float a bond, the pipeline gets built, that pipeline goes to the TRIGID. According to this, the county then owns the pipeline?
The GID would own the pipeline.
And because it's the GID is a governmental...
It's a governmental entity.
Okay.
The county can also handle that, again, for the record, Martin Johnson, the county can also handle that on projects through an interlocal agreement.
Okay. So at Painted Rock, then, an example would be they float a bond for all their infrastructure, and then at the end of the day, it winds up coming to the county?
Who would float a bond?
I'm just asking. Who else besides TRI would benefit from these guidelines, would be applying to these guidelines?
You're mixing apples and oranges here. I mean, you're talking about Painted Rock now.
Okay, my mistake. Who else besides TRI would be taking advantage or be under this particular guideline?
Perhaps if you want to have a redevelopment district in Virginia City or something like that, there would be guidelines to... Now we've got a starting point.
Okay.
If anything you want to do a special, you know, district in, these are the guidelines. So this would be the template for anything you want to go forward.
Okay. Thank you.
Welcome. All right. Any other public comment regarding this item? All right. Chuck, can I go ahead and get a motion to approve?
Yes. And thank you for your explanation. Commissioner Jack McGuffey, move to approve the adoption of the Story County Developer Special Assessment Guidelines.
Second to motion. Moved and second to approve this item. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Are we ready to go to 8 now?
Yeah.
Okay. Next up on the agenda is item number 8. This is discussion of possible action. Approval of interlocal agreement for traffic signal maintenance between Story County and Carson City.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. For the record, Pat Whitten, County Manager. It's a pretty great day. We're getting closer and closer to having really the first traffic light that Story County has. And with that comes certainly challenges, like what do we do with it? So NDOT's got kind of an interesting approach. They build it, then they hand the keys over to you and say you're responsible for it. We don't do anything. So every time you see a traffic signal on any highway, it's maintained by some local government jurisdiction. And since we only have one, I thought it prudent not to hire an engineer and a bunch of people that are well-versed in this to take care of one signal. So I reached out to our friends in Carson City. And you can go to the first slide. And Carson City Public Works, who we partner with an awful lot on projects through our Public Works group. And, of course, everybody knows we partner closely with Carson City all the time. And I'm very pleased to say that if there are specific questions about the services that will be provided, James Jacklett and also Craig Horton are here in the back of the room from Carson City. They took the time to come up today as well. So we're going to give you just a brief overview. Carson City Public Works currently does signal maintenance agreement via interlocal agreements, very similar to the one before you, for both Douglas County and Lyon County. In discussions with Carson City toward the end of last year and the beginning of this year, they are willing to take care of our signal for us as well, under certain terms and conditions. They're willing to enter into an agreement for services for the new traffic signal at USA and Electric Avenue. Next slide. You got it. Okay. I'll just read off the top. Some of the things that they do include preventative maintenance. Those are periodic inspections and equipment servicing per a plan that we'll develop with their input and guidance, but clearly it is our plan. And I want to credit them, too, knowing that it's about a 50-mile drive from Carson City Public Works over on Beauty Lane out to Electric Avenue. They've consolidated some services that when you've got 50 lights in and around Minden Gardnerville or something, you might do those a little more often. So when they're out for an annual maintenance, they'll do a couple of other things, and on a quarterly maintenance, they'll do some things as well. So those are to control costs to our benefit. And then they'll also do an annual certification on a monitoring unit for malfunctions. And then the unplanned response maintenance is they'd come out if there were malfunctions, traffic accidents, any other performance issues. Next slide. We seem to have missed one somewhere in here, but it's important to step back, and apparently we don't have this. So I can jot that too, see if we skipped one. There we go. Program overview. Carson City will provide the labor, equipment, and materials, and they'll invoice us at their current rates and effective time of service. Essentially, this is a time and materials-based agreement, and it covers both preventative response and technical support services, but they're delivered under our direction and our management. It's clear this is our signal. We're using them to support and service that technical support. There we go. Some of the things that will be done by them is they will configure and test the equipment. These are complex devices. I had no idea what goes into traffic signals. They'll assist and consult with us on timing and also developing policies and procedures. And they'll finalize the configuration and utilization of the equipment and software for remote monitoring and configuration of the signal equipment. This, I think, is really cool, as they explained it to me. A lot of what they do, they won't have to drive that 100-mile round trip to get out to the signal. They can drill into it right from their public works yard and make certain programming changes as either Tesla changes shifts or new events or new companies come out there. So that, again, will save us a lot of travel time, save them as well. Okay, our responsibilities. We're clearly overall responsible for it. We're responsible for the operation and the maintenance of the traffic signal. They're basically our agent. We also provide management over the response, maintenance, and emergency incidents. We'll develop an annual budget each year dealing with purchasing, contract administration with them, planning, and policies and procedures. We'll approve the configuration and timing and policy for the operation of the traffic control devices. We will also provide traffic control when required through Sheriff Antonora's group or Public Works. And we're responsible for getting the utility line locations to service the lights. Okay, we already pretty much know where it is, and I've already mentioned that it's about an hour travel time each way now that USA Parkway is open, and it's a beautiful drive. So that takes care of that slide, Austin. That is the end of it. Any questions for me or any questions from Carson City?
Yes, I have a question. In the event that there is an accident out there and it were to totally take out one of the power poles, would Carson City, would they replace it, or would NDOT have to come back out and replace the power pole?
James, you want to cover that?
Good morning.
Good morning,
Commissioners. For the record, James Jacklett, Operations Manager, Control Systems for Carson City Public Works. So in response to your question, if I heard it correctly, if there's an accident at the site, we're going to partner with you to take care of that. So as long as we have the resources, we're going to send them out. The contract really puts us, again, as your agent, to help assist you and take care of this. We're used to this. We've maintained 71 additional traffic signals in addition to a number of other complex transportation devices. We rely heavily on Par Electric and Titan Electrical, as well as other contractors, for major reconstruction. So in the event that a semi causes severe damage out there, that would be a cooperative deal. We'd be working with you, with outside contractors. Obviously, there'd be traffic control in order to, you know, restore order and get that thing reconstructed.
Okay.
Great. Is this going to be monitored with cameras?
The current NDOT design, so this is an NDOT designed signal, and it's already been bid, it's already been awarded. It's my understanding. There are no cameras at the intersection at this time. However, per the design, it looks like NDOT is installing conduit that will connect back to their facility. So I think that once they have those fiber connections, they will be installing additional cameras. And since it's your signal in cooperation with them, you could always install cameras as you see fit.
So, then is somebody going to actually then have to stand out there and count cars basically to kind of set the timing up?
Yeah, well, the timing, we'll work with, once we have this agreement in place, we'll work with the county and with NDOT. Again, with the volumes that NDOT will already have on those roads, we'll be able to get a very good feeling for what's going on. Since this is a standalone signal, it's not in an arterial, it's not going to require coordination with any other signals. So the timing is very straightforward. For the most part, the signal is going to operate in a fully actuated mode, responding to demand. So the configuration on our side will be limited to the different safety intervals, the sequence, and how it performs, and then some max time. So, for instance, saying that USA Parkway will be able to stay green for up to 60 seconds before it has to depart that and go to its side streets and serve those.
Is this one of those lights that hang in the center of the intersection, or you got boom arms holding the lights?
The image showed it. It's in your packet, but there are mast arms. This has a vertical pole with a horizontal arm. That's the NDOT spec, just like you see in Reno, Carson City, around the area. That's what it will be. Fairly large arms. At this one, I'm not sure what the length is, but typically those can be 40 to 60 feet out for a while.
All right. Thank you. Okay.
Welcome.
And you said that there's some type of sensors also that dictate for the light strain.
Yeah, there are two typical sensors at these. The first one will be the vehicle detection, and those at this install will be inductive loops in the ground. So that's still the most reliable, most consistent level of detection. Our interest in this is aligns with yours in making sure that we don't have to come out and work on this. We don't want to. We want to set it up to be redundant, resilient, and hopefully we won't have to worry about it. So with the pavement out there, as long as it's good, the life on those, assuming there's no additional lane changes or modifications to the road, you should expect at least 10 years of service out of those loops. The other detection is emergency vehicle preemption will be installed on that. Your rescue ambulances, as well as those of Sparks and the rest of the area, still rely on optical preemption, so it will service fire engines and ambulances. In our region, none of the law enforcement have emergency vehicle preemption on their vehicles, just because we don't typically have congestion bad enough to affect them.
Does that system also count cars?
There's the ability to pull counts off of those loop detectors, those inductive detectors. The logging that we have once we establish remote communications with the signal, we'll be able to tell whether or not it's meeting demand, how often it's terminating early or gapping out due to ending. So we'll be able to pull those things, and with there's some discretion in how it's set up, it can do that. The detectors that are there can specifically be purposed if that's an interest.
Thanks.
We won't have any synchronizing issues for a while. We got our second one.
Correct.
Les, did you have a question? Would you mind hanging around just for a second? I'm going to ask for public comment in case someone has a question.
Sure. And I'll
do that right now. I'll open up the public comment. Okay.
Well, I just want to make one comment on there. I just want to say that we're happy to partner with Story County. As Pat said, we do this for Douglas County. We do it for Lyon. We have two signal technicians and myself. I was a signal technician years ago, as well as the rest of our staff. We really care about these. We work closely with our regional partners, so Sparks, Washoe, to conform these, make all of these work together. And especially next to Tesla, I expect great advancements as we move into autonomous and semi-autonomous vehicles and bring those forward. And we'll be there to help you and provide those services as it goes.
Thank you. And we appreciate you helping us out because we've got a great working relationship with Carson City.
So, Mr. Chairman, in conclusion, again, I want to thank Carson City Public Works, James, Craig, everybody. They have been from the get-go, from the very first meeting, they have said, sure, we would love to do this. We also did some very, very tentative pro forma budgets as to about roughly how many trips out there, contingency for a couple, and this is not going to be anywhere near as costly an item as I feared that it would be, hopefully, under regular conditions, especially for a new signal. So it's my pleasure as staff to request and recommend approval of the interlocal agreement for traffic signal maintenance between Story County and Carson City. This will subsequently be
heard by their RTC board down the road.
Very good. Great. Thanks, Pat. All right.
Ready for a motion?
I'm ready for a motion on this.
I, Commissioner Jack McGaffey, move for the approval of the interlocal agreement for traffic signal maintenance between Story County and Carson City.
I'll second.
It's been moved in a second to approve the interlocal agreement. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Very good. Thanks, gentlemen, for coming up today. All right, we're going to go ahead and we're going to move back to item number six now. This discussion only. We'll take no action or public comment. These are committee and staff reports. Let's start. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I did mixed signals, so I want to also acknowledge an arrival here should there have been any questions. But our legal counsel, Kendra Fillet with Sherman Howard, is here, and we'll probably be leaving shortly since I told her that we're done and over with. But Kendra, you're going to stand so everybody knows who our counsel is.
Thank you. Thanks for making the trek up. All righty, we're going to start on the right side of the room with Sheriff Antonoro. Okay, thank you, Sheriff. Our Director of IT, James Dean.
With your permission, I'm going to do a joint presentation with Jim Chapman, our recorder.
Absolutely.
Same topic. You go first.
Okay. Sure. James Dean, Story County IT Director. My report is fairly brief. The data center is 100% operational. The fiber is in the courthouse, also 100% operational. We've made substantial progress on both the Encode installation and the Eagle Recorder software for both the recorder and the financial component for Hugh Gallagher and his folks. We're doing some SSL certificates today, and we expect to be doing beta testing in the next 3 weeks. So we are right at the forefront with the other counties in the state that have jumped on board and made quick progress, and I think we're caught up to Churchill. So, as usual, we're at the forefront of technology, and we're pushing forward very quickly.
All right. Thanks. Jen?
And just kind of giving another brief overview. We've been extremely busy in the last couple of weeks. Overall, we've had a project team that's developed a project charter for the ERP system implementation. It really lays out a guide to the project, who's managing it, identifies milestones, and what we look to accomplish through it. It's a big step toward developing the system to making sure that it's not only user-friendly, but that it helps all the departments become improve their business processes. Individual workstations have already been upgraded by James and his crew. One of the requirements of this program is to have all the computers and workstations on the domain. So we're about pretty much through all of the really affected offices, about halfway through. We're continuing that rollover there. In code for the financial side, we are moving full steam ahead. We're discussing account segments and schemas. We're reviewing current account structures, what reports we need, and our what reports we desire. Now we're beginning some training on what we have for the Tyler. A lot of this is just that beginning process, and then we're going to be getting screenshots and working with them to develop that part. On the Eagle Tyler side, I finished my little data discrepancy that occurred during the 1990s, so that's been rectified. They're doing a new data pull for all of that information. And screenshots, program developments, they're all completed. So we've already been doing video training. In about 2 weeks, we're going to start our user acceptance testing, which is where we're going to have that installed on our workstations, and we're going to start using it. It's not going to be something anybody else will see at this moment. We're just going to use it, test it, provide feedback, say, no, we don't want that, and vice versa. But we're moving right ahead. And then in a couple more weeks, you'll get a full overall presentation by us, too.
All right. Sounds great.
Yeah.
Thanks for the update.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Right. Okay. flood damage project coordinator, Mike Northand.
Morning, Commissioners. Mike Northand for the record. I have a few items here to update you on. First of all is the mobile office unit, which you've all seen here at the north side of the courthouse. I have to say it was great to see the cooperation at Team Story. That building was delivered, placed, power, data, and phones were all run. A ramp was built, and all of this happened in about 10 business days. This is a temporary solution. It allows continuity of operation for the clerk's office while work in the clerk's office in the building here can continue unhindered by occupancy. Speaking of the work in the clerk's office, Belfour is compiling the last of the revised estimate numbers from the subcontractors, including material handlers. That final estimate should go in this week to go into the insurance company and get hopefully approved very quickly. We do have SHPO approval for all the work interior. Once work starts in the clerk's office, you should see rapid progress there. We do have an exception here with the judge's chambers. In the judge's chambers here, we're lucky to have this beautiful plaster detailing, but people who do that, I mean, it's a dying art. So they did manage to get a hold of what we call the plaster master. He is currently booked out until about April. There's just not many of these guys. So Belfour is working very hard to get this guy to either adjust his schedule on our behalf or take advantage of any cancellations that may happen to try and move that work up. Unfortunately, we can't just go back in with non-like or modern materials. That's part of historical preservation in there. So, on the courthouse roof, one of the chimneys, I'm happy to report, is completed. The second, this fireplace here, second chimney over in here is about half done. That'll be completed tomorrow morning. The third chimney, which would be over the recorder's office there, will be completed by the end of the week. Roof tear-off is going to begin Monday, this Monday, February 12th, and at that time you can expect the north portion of the parking lot to be pretty well closed off, as well as the south entrance to the building. They're going to try and limit that closure as much as possible, but during the work, it's up to them to maintain a safe work environment. So that will be closed for some period of time. We're looking at about 2 weeks for completion of the roof, barring discovery of any unknown problem conditions. Last item is the mailbox project. I was able to meet with Mr. McGuffey, Mr. Carmona of the 1 acre Homeowners Association, and Mr. Schmoker of the 10 acre Homeowners Association. They were able to get together on a proposal from a local contractor that will address some of the scope of work there and fulfill the total budgeted amount that was donated by Mr. McGuffey. You guys have any questions for me?
Commissioners, any questions for Mike? None? Okay. Thanks for your report.
Thank you, sir.
Mike. All righty. Let's move along now to our Director of Security, Melanie Keener.
Nothing today. Thank you.
Very good. Over Community Chest and Library, Eric Schoen.
Good morning, Commissioners and everybody else. For the record, Eric Schoen with Community Chest. Just a quick update in the Community Center where the elevator is fully installed and functional. We're making progress on the finish work. So we're hoping within about a month and a half, to have it all completed so that our staff can start moving into it, start utilizing that space. Probably have a soft opening, and then what we're looking at, we think, is a grand opening on June 1st. But I'll confirm that with you. That will be a Friday, the first Friday in June. As well, I wanted to let you all know that we have our 8th annual, I believe, benefit concert coming up in April. We are bringing, he's been called the Jimi Hendrix of the Resonator Guitar, otherwise known as the Dobro. His name is Jerry Douglas. He's a 14-time Grammy-winning artist. He's been nominated 29 times. Plays for Alison Krauss, for those of you into Americana. We have tickets available on our website. I'm assuming we'll have a sellout, so if you want to come, buy your tickets early. So that's all I have. Any questions for me?
Nope. No. Great. Good job.
Okay.
Great.
All right. Thank you.
And as Eric leaves, I want to thank him and in retrospect, Sean as well, for giving me the name that I'm going to use here in a little bit. But the builder of their second phase of the community center is perhaps one of the best builders I've ever chatted with and are beginning to work with, but we'll get to that in my report. So thank you, Eric.
All right, well, we move along now to the sewer line project coordinator, Mike Nevin.
Good morning. For the record, Mike Nevin with All Comstock LLC, or contract coordinator for the Virginia City Wastewater Improvement Project. Just to give you a little monthly update here, we're 400 days to substantial. To date, we've used 148 construction days, so we have 252 remaining to substantial. And if the weather holds true to what it has been doing for the last several months, some people call it winter. I think it's more like spring. I think probably the project may run ahead of schedule. Just depends. So we're at 32% complete as of Friday, last week. Thus far, there has been over 15,000 feet of pipe laid in the ground. 83 manholes have been installed and 110 service connections. A milestone within the last month, we finally were able to get through the Savage hoisting work site on E Street. That was a little precarious site that was discovered as we were digging through to install a line there. Required some extensive archaeological research. They did a lot of photographs, prepared some excellent drawings. So once they complete their final report and get it into the entities, including SHPO, hopefully we'll be able to release some of that information to the public, and that's our goal. Quite interesting, actually, what they did discover underneath the surface at about 7-8 feet deep there. So is more of that to come? We certainly hope not, but this is the Comstock, so you know we're prepared to find something new each and every day. Where we are right now, from Washington Street South, on the lower end of town, we're pretty much completed up to C Street, including the bore crossing across the highway at 341 and D, just south of the Fourth Ward School. We've gone all the way up to the top of Silver Street and connected to the C Street main there, as well as Flowery Street. We're finishing up F Street, and that'll tie in up at F and E, and then we'll pretty much be completed with the south end of the project south of Washington. We're working today on N Street, which is a little short jog from Flowery Row up to Washington to pick those places up. If you read the updates that I send out weekly, you'll notice that we've also been able to accomplish paving due to the temperatures being above 40 and rising each day. And it's our goal by Friday to have the rest of Washington Street paved and overlaid from L Street all the way up to the middle school at D Street. They're prepping that as we speak. So the pavers will start that project tomorrow. So we moved off of Union in order to allow traffic, the east-west traffic, to have a couple of different routes while L Street is compromised due to the paving and the shutdown. We do have F Street closed for the remainder of the week from Washington up to the DE intersection, or the FE intersection, and we're moving along there. When I left this morning to come up here, We're crossing the second crossing there at the railroad tracks where that crosses F Street. We did not have to raise the crossing up out of the way. We're able to make an alignment shift for the main a little bit south of that crossing, so we didn't compromise that crossing, because that's quite the structure that would have had to been either moved or bored under, and the boring costs are pretty substantial for that, so we saved some dollars there. I think that's about it, unless you have questions. Been going great. Have had very little issues, problems. The public has been great and cooperative. I know it's an inconvenience, as I mention every time, but, you know, that's what it is. And once it's all done, you know, some of the stuff that we've been finding just ceases to amaze me how sewage even flowed through some of it. But, you know, eventually when the project gets near completion, we'll be able to present some sort of a small slideshow for you and show you some of these real bad areas. We've been trying to get some of those photographs posted now on the website, and RAD is doing an exceptional job with that. So I've been feeding them photographs. The project folks have been doing that as well, getting them into Ronell so she can get that stuff posted, because it's quite interesting. And it gives the public a perception of really what's going on. So
it's a good project to have a dry winter for.
Yeah. You got that right.
If I could jump on something, I think Mike hit exactly what I want to really emphasize. And not only Ames quality, we've said that repeatedly at this meeting, and it's true, but the public's patience has been incredible. I've learned, just getting home last night while they were prepping Washington, I had to figure out four different ways to get into my street. And everybody knows when they're working in the area, don't bother washing your car, because you know, the minute they've got it torn up and the water trucks are working to keep the dust down and as much mud and crud off the roads as we can. But the public's patience, the people of Virginia City, has actually been amazing. So we should definitely thank them, because it's coming toward you.
Yeah, I know. It's good. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. Over tourism. Director of BCTC, Danny Dotson. All right, thank you, Danny. Our director over at Planning and Human Resources, Austin Osborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. I have two items today. Just to give you an update on our health benefits insurance, we are at that time, as I've explained in the past, we're at that renewal period. So we're working with LP Insurance, our insurance broker, on looking at all the data, all the numbers, the claims ratio, all kinds of fun, interesting information that shows we're not in good condition on our situation with our payout versus the premiums. And so we're working with them to try to come up with not only what the numbers are, but what our options might be as far as changing the plan around a little bit, what might happen to the premium, and other you know, aspects of our plan that will try to be a responsible plan that's also a good plan under the conditions we have with a very upside-down claims ratio this year. I did meet with Jesse Fain, and I met with Carol Ingalls. She is, as we know, our insurance broker for risk management side with some other items in the county. She's got a tremendous amount of experience in this type of work, and I appreciate it, Mr. McBride, on your direction about her, and she provided some ideas and some things to look at, and we'll go ahead and start doing that. And really just nothing wrong with getting a second opinion and getting somebody else's eyes on something to make sure we're seeing everything. We'll be forming our annual task force that composed of some of our employees and other folks that are on our plan, and to talk to them about, you know, what our findings are and what the conditions might be, and if we have to make some sacrifices in our plan to try to work with our employees the best we can to see, you know, what can't you live without and what could you live without, and we'll be working on that. And likely, we're hoping at least, that we'll remain with Hometown Health, but it's likely we're going to remain on our high deductible plan that we're on today with the health savings account supplementary, and we'll make some adjustments to our benefits. This will all be happening between now and April 30th, so you'll start hearing more and more and more of what we got going on here. And Kevin Monahan from LP Insurance, when we do the presentation to this board on what the conditions are, he's agreed to come to the meeting and answer as many technical questions that might come as needed. Secondly, and as we all know, that we're working with Comptroller's Office on the budget renewal process this year, and on the HR side, meeting with the department heads and what kind of staffing is needed and what kind of changes to staffing are needed, and really just building a staffing model for the next budget. And at this time, I'm also doing a full compensation study for certain positions in the county, looking at how our not only our pay and our benefits compare to the region, but also how our job descriptions compare to the region, to make sure that when we go into that next budget cycle, if we need to combine positions and things like that, that we do it appropriately. And that one is a full manual process. So it's just basically going from all the counties in the region for every description and how they compare to where we are. That's all I have. Thank you.
Any questions for Austin?
That's great. Thank you, Austin. Thank you, Austin. With the Comptroller's Office, Mr. Gallagher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Hugh Gallagher, Story County Comptroller. I was remiss last year in mentioning this, and I did not want to make that mistake again, because as of February 20th, we will have to announce to the Department of Taxation whether we're going to change our tax rate. We've been at this since 2015, and we have gone through examples of tax rate reductions of 5, 10, 15, 20%. We have gone through taxpayer rebates. All are sitting somewhere in the middle category of the Department of Taxation, trying to actually give us some guidance on what we do, especially with the rebate problem. And we've also taken a look at taxpayer allowances through something similar they did with the pipeline. And at this point in time, nothing seems to come out that can give us some indication that we should probably or can probably at this point in time reduce the tax rate. My suggestion is that we leave it alone this year. I was not going to preface that, but understanding the last 2 days where the Dow Jones has gone down 1,600 points, all because of the fact that they think that there's interest rates, could be interest rate reductions, could be higher inflations, and oh, by the way, there's a new Fed chief that is being appointed, and so that is one of the problems what happens with the stock market. But anyway, if there are no objections, I know this is just a discussion item on behalf of me, I will, unless I hear anything different, I will go ahead and contact the Department of Taxation and alert them that we will not be changing the tax rate this year.
That will be an agenda item on February 20, though, right?
Yeah. Any questions for you? Thanks, Mr. Gallagher. Chief Deputy District Attorney, Mr. Loomis.
Nothing to do, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
County Manager Whitman.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, on behalf of our interim Public Works Director, Jason Worsbecky, he reports that the playground equipment for Lockwood Park, for Perry Park, has arrived actually early, and we're coordinating with Sierra Winds to do the installation. So that's good news. And shout out to Commissioner Gilman, actually Lance Gilman, who made a personal donation that really made this happen within budget, a very generous one. So thank you, Lance. And other than that, his principal work right now is working closely with Ames, as I think I've mentioned before, Mike's mentioned. As we work in certain areas, we are performing certain work outside the scope of the contract because it makes sense. We're adding additional water, shutoff valves, those types of things. So that's from Jason. from me. I mentioned the community chess contractor. That is Shaheen Beauchamp. And looking at the quality of the building and remember how the bidding came in, as you all know, we are really, I'm going to say, under mandate, not under protested mandate, but under mandate, the district court judges really want to use this courtroom exclusively for district court. Now, that doesn't mean the commission can't meet in here and planning commission and others. They've been very generous there. But they also, they want Justice Court to have its own court facility. So as I've reported in the past, we've looked at a number of options. It seems apparent that the most logical option is to try to build one adjacent to the courthouse and on the property to the north here that we recently acquired. I'm here today to report what I think is very good news. And then I hope to have this maybe on the March 6th agenda for further action, actually, by the commission to authorize this to move forward. But we had some initial quotes from contractors that were very high. All that we really need to construct for a justice court is about 3,000 square feet, nothing big. We were going to build it in such a way we could add on to it, and Mark Beauchamp and Dave Nair, who is Jim's husband from the palace, so everybody knows him, went to school up here. They recommended going ahead and building out the second floor anyway as a shell. So it's very disruptive. You'd have to move the justice court back out of there while they did that. Prices never go down on construction. So long story short, we're looking at about a 6,000 square foot building in two floors of 3,000 each. And we have been dealing up in the $550 square foot range, which was frightening. Mark came back from Shaheen Beauchamp, and his quotes for just the shell building is about $140 a square foot, which is incredible. And then with tenant improvements on the ground floor, we'll get to that in just a minute since Judge Harrington walked in, we're looking at probably just under $200, maybe $184, $185. You know, again, these are ballparks. A lot depends on specs. So I've been in touch with Pete Dubay, our architect, that's been working over the next 2 to 3 weeks. He's going to take a quick trip to Mexico. But he will be doing two things. He'll be working on a conceptual exterior design that will be acceptable to SHPO. There was a building over there, so we've got some historic photos to work from. And then he'll also be working with Judge Harrington on floor plans for the ground floor. We're going to leave the top floor just shelled out. So, again, probably the best news I've been able to report in a long time on this. So that's that one. And last, I have to be careful, but Lance taught me a word I haven't used in a long time, and that was the word epic. He used it during the Tesla transaction. And I have to tell you, in the last 2 to 3 weeks, I never thought there would be anything more epic than Tesla's epic, but as you've all read in the papers, including the local paper, a group called Blockchains, with an S on the end, has bought essentially, and I'll let Lance speak to this during board comment, but I think pretty much everything is left in tribe for the most part. And there are a number of properties that come into play. I'm under non-disclosure agreement, so I can't go too much further other than to say I have met with the principals from Blockchains probably 4 times now. I'm really anxious to be working with them. I would tell you, hold on to your hats, because it's going to be quite a ride and quite a fun one, I think, with some of the stuff that they're thinking through and having concepts. So it's going to be great.
Right. Any questions for Pat?
All right. Since the gist of the piece did walk in, Sarah, didn't you have anything to say? If you'd like to speak, would you mind coming up to the podium, identifying yourself for the record? Because we have staff that torture us when we don't get this on audio.
I think Harrington, Justice of the Peace. I just came in because I heard that our relocation topic was coming up. Not that everything here isn't of utmost importance to me, just busy in the office, but I do want to say thank you to Pat and the whole commissioners and everybody who has been working on this project. It's been long, and it's being very well thought out with the taxpayers and with all the different components in mind, and that's all I wanted to say is thank you. I look forward to it.
Thank you.
All right. County Clerk, Ms. Stevens. Nothing today? All righty. That concludes our committee and staff reports. We'll move on now to item number 7. These are board comments. We'll take no action or public comment on these. And I'll start down to the far end of the table here. Commissioner Gilman.
Well, thank you, Pat, for that. I appreciate it very much. Just a few comments today for those of you that have attended. This week, we'll see the finalization of the blockchain transaction, so we're a tiny bit premature, but within the next couple of days, I think there's going to be a tremendous amount of press and excitement in the Northern Nevada area, trade area. It probably all started with Google. Google, as you all know, closed their 1,200-acre campus transaction in last February. And I can announce that they are now moving forward with a development concept that we'll probably see some construction start this year, and that's an exciting project on its own. Since February of last year, this last few months have seen us acquire, if you will. I've sold myself out of a job. The companies started folding in quickly after February, and we've had a phenomenal, tremendous amount of closings, activity in Story County. I think watch for the Economist magazine. It'll be out at the end of this week. It'll have an international flavor to it. But it's all going to culminate with the blockchains joining our family. And the Ethereum blockchain concept, which is not Bitcoin. A lot of folks have misinterpreted that. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go to a meeting this afternoon specializing in blockchain, and I think all of us are probably going to have to play catch-up here. It was suggested to me that the Internet was significant in changing the direction of the world, and that the blockchain technology will be equal or greater to that, that virtually everything in our world will be digitized, and the time is coming when all of us will do the majority of our business on the blockchain technology. I can tell you that the blockchain group has purchased their international headquarters here. They started looking kind of like Tesla. If you remember, Tesla wanted 100 acres and then 300 acres and then 500 acres, and by the time they closed, they purchased 1,000 acres, and they have just grown in their vision and their development of products and their comfort in the state of Nevada. And certainly Tesla is epic. I believe blockchains will be incredibly epic in Story County and in our community. Again, they started with 150 acres, then they went to 3,000 acres, and by the end of this week, they will own 67,125 acres. And they will be building out all of the major communities in TRI. You'll see Painted Rock develop as a very exciting, state-of-the-art, high-tech, smart home community development. And we'll be working on that this year. All of the freeway commercial will go blockchain. The lake project, which is all of the property surrounding the lake there in TRI, is going to go very, very Las Vegas-style lakes project, hotels. We already have two Hiltons signed for that project. It's going to become what they call the Emerald Lake downtown. Hotels already assigned, casinos, restaurants, tremendous retail segment there going around the lake. So starting today, the path has changed, the direction has changed, and we'll enjoy how all this comes together. But I think it's a tremendous, tremendous financial opportunity for our Story County. And we certainly are recognized on the national stage today as the epicenter of the most creative technology happening in the globe today. So a lot of exciting things coming this year for us. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Lance. Mm-hmm. Vice Chairman McGuffey.
Yes. This is a kind of a tri-related story. Stacy Gilbert from the Senior Center and Michael Land from the Community Chest. Eric left. Okay. And myself got invited out to an industrial park company called ThriveMarket.com. They sell healthy foods online. It's kind of like an online grocery store. And so we were given the tour of the place and samples of their product. Like I said, it's all healthy stuff. For the most part, I liked everything I've tried. Maybe not so crazy on the kelp chips, but the rest of it was pretty darn good. And they get stuff returned. Maybe it was a pallet of stuff that was in a truck accident or something, but they get stuff returned, and they can't put it back on the shelves, even if the boxes weren't open. So they give it to different charities. Well, they're going to supply the Senior Center and Community Chest with as much as they want, pretty much. Her question was, how many pallets of stuff do you want? So I'm leaving that up to Stacy and Michael Ann to determine that. But that's their way of donating to our community, just like Nature's Way. Nature's Way now donates a lot of their product to our seniors centers and the community centers. So about once a month we get a pallet load, and we kind of divvy it up between the senior centers. So things are moving well on that. As some of you that might have saw, I'm drawing a blank on her name, Laura Mather, she's the director, executive director of the Fourth Ward School. I, of course, am the second term president of the school. And we were pretty much thanking Mr. Commissioner Gilman here for donating $1,600 so that the school could buy a wishing well for the kids. And this wishing well is a little money generator. Laura was over in California at some park, and she saw this wishing well, and kids were just dropping money just to watch the coin go round and round before it dropped into the bucket. And it was a big hit, so she convinced us to let's see if we can get one. And so they made a phone call from the meeting to Lance, and he said, absolutely. And he was in, and that's why we were doing the picture and the check giving. So thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. You're welcome.
Very much. Very well. That's all I have to say right now.
Thanks, Jack. I don't really have anything on my plate here, but one thing we're going to need to probably put on the consent agenda for the next regularly scheduled meeting is that Tuesday, March the 6th, commissioners' meeting will be canceled. Commissioner McGuffey and myself will be in Washington, along with the county manager and human resources director as well. So we're going to be going back for that conference in Washington, and it just happens to coincide with our meeting day, so we'll have to cancel that one.
It also coincides with the election sign-ups as well, so I won't be able to sign up till we get back.
Okay, this brings us up to item number 11, but we've been in this a little bit over an hour. Why don't we go ahead and take about a 5-minute recess, okay?